Well, hello everyone. This is my name is Trevor, and I am one of the franchise development directors here with Right at Home. And I first and foremost want to thank everybody for joining today to hear about how in-home care is going to fit into the healthcare continuum. And our guest today is our CEO, Brian Petranek. Thanks, Brian, for squeezing us into your schedule. I know you're a busy guy, and we appreciate you being able to take time out of your schedule to educate us a little bit on the topics that we bring up on these Tuesday conversations.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
So we'll get things rolling here. You know, I always like to start these things off by, you know, kind of discussing the past a little bit. You know, Brian, when you think of in-home care and how it currently fits into the healthcare continuum, I mean, you've got a unique perspective because you've been here, I think, for, gosh, about 20 years at this point. So, you know, you've really seen it. You've really seen quite a bit on this in this landscape. Can you paint us a picture of what that landscape looked like back in 1995 when we started?
Yeah, happy to do that. And thank you, everybody, who's listening in today or who's going to listen in later. I think it's fair to say that we've seen a huge change in this industry over the course of the last 20 to 25 years. So we started franchising originally in 2000. Allen opened the original Right at Home office in 1995. And I even predate Right at Home by a few years in the industry, having worked for a different organization going back into the early 90s. So when we kind of look at where the industry was back in the early 90s compared to where it is today, so back then it was very, very nascent, very new, very much kind of on the verge of even becoming an emerging industry. I wouldn't even say it was emerging at that point, but it was sort of on the verge of becoming that. And it was really due to the fact that there were several, for lack of a better term, societal drivers, and that kind of made these services become more marketable or something that people were interested in pursuing and taking care of their loved ones. So home care as a concept has been around for years and years and years. The Visiting Nurse Association is one of the oldest home care companies in the country. They've been around for, I think, nearly almost 100 years. So the concept of sending people into the home to take care of the aging is not necessarily new and didn't start in the early 90s. But the concept of having private caregivers, people that you hire and paid privately and not being paid for by insurance companies or entitlement programs like Medicare, and being able to control the environment, being able to control how much service you got, how long those people were in the house, the things that they did, that's really what started to become prevalent back in the early 90s. So it was very new. Nobody knew about it. It was not a concept that people really could even wrap their heads around. We used to joke about how you would have to literally have 20 minutes to explain to people what exactly we do and how that works. And so that's probably the biggest change from back then till today, is that now it's not really a secret anymore. People certainly understand home care and options like this are available and taking care of their loved ones.
Well, that's great. And, you know, just fast-forwarding to today, how have those services changed from 1995 to now? Like, can you describe that for us a little bit? What was it like back then, and what is it like present day 2019?
You know, the funny thing is there's really not that much difference. So how we were taking care of people back in the early 90s and how we're taking care of people today really is exactly the same. I mean, home care in its construct is very basic. We're putting trained individuals into the home to take care of someone's basic needs, whether that's needs or the activities of daily living, things like bathing, dressing, grooming, or just kind of what we call the IADLs, which are sort of related to the ADLs, activities of daily living, but these are independent activities. So it's, you know, paying bills and, you know, having a clean environment, those types of things. So that's it really hasn't changed a whole lot. What's changed is sort of the software, the technology that we utilize, how we schedule it, how our caregivers interact with their care plans. Those things have all changed. Back, you know, in the 90s, we used to do everything on paper. Today, we're moving away from paper and doing a lot more utilizing technology. Also, ancillary technology and remote monitoring, those types of things were not available back in the mid to late 90s. Much more prevalent today. So, but again, just the basic foundation of the business and the service hasn't changed at all.
Well, and you had earlier said that people just couldn't wrap their heads around it in the earlier days. How do you feel, how have people been able to wrap their heads around this now? Do you feel it's something where they had a loved one that needed these types of services and they wanted to avoid a nursing home atmosphere? Like, what societal change do you feel has really led to people accepting these types of services versus where it once was?
I think a lot of that's a great question. There's not really one thing that you can point to say what's made that change. I think it's a variety of factors. Number one, I think you touched on a couple of them, but one I'll say, you're pretty hard pressed anymore to be able to go to a cocktail party or have people over to your house or go out to dinner with friends and not find out if you ask a couple questions that people are dealing with aging issues. So this is very common. It's a lot more open and discussed. I have it happen all the time now. So I'll randomly meet somebody on a plane or something and they'll ask me what I do and I'll tell them. And almost immediately and in almost every single case, they go, oh my gosh, you know what? I wish we knew about services like that when I was dealing with my mom a couple of years ago. Or it's, yep, we use services like that, or my neighbors used it, or, so people have personal experiences, whether they know of people that have used these services, or their personal experiences are they're just dealing with an aging loved one, and so they understand now the need for the service, and they're more familiar with options out there. So some of it has to do with national advertising, so Right at Home and other companies are doing national advertising. That was unheard of 20 years ago. So we've raised awareness that way. There's just a lot more companies out there providing these services. So we have Right at Home, we have other organizations out there. And I always say, we as an industry, even with our competitors, have done a great job raising general awareness over the course of the last 20 years. So it's a kind of a combination of all of those factors, because if you think about all the home care companies that are out there, we're all reaching out to referral sources. We're all talking to hospitals. We're talking to primary care physicians. We're talking to discharge planners. So they're more aware of these services. They're talking to clients about it. There's all kinds of information online. So there's just been a variety of number of different channels that people can learn about home care, and that has led to overall awareness. And by the way, we measure this, so we know exactly what consumer awareness was back in the early 2000s and what it is today, and the difference is about 70 points. So back in the early 2000s, unaided consumer awareness around home care was in the teens, and today that number is approaching, I think it's like mid-80s. So we've moved a significant number of points, and that's percentages. So 15% of people knew about home care, and now it's 85% roughly. So we've moved about 70 points.
Wow. So, it seems like the consumer has really been able to wrap their mind around our types of services that we provide. Certainly when we started, the healthcare landscape has changed greatly over the past 20 years. Certainly, I mean, obviously with technology, it's certainly benefited us, but obviously it's benefited the healthcare arena as well too. But how, where are we fitting within their mindsets now? Your healthcare providers out there, how's Right at Home fitting in with their current mindset? Now that we've hit upon the consumer mindset, what about the healthcare providers?
Yeah, that's a little bit harder to answer, and I'll just generally say it's evolving. in a very positive way, but it's still evolving. But to understand what I mean by evolving, we kind of have to take a step back and look even 10, 15 years ago to say that our industry, although we sort of worked alongside other providers in the healthcare ecosystem, we would work alongside Medicare home care providers or hospice providers, for example, or even going into hospitals or nursing homes or whatever, we were just always kind of considered this service that was outside of the healthcare continuum, that this is just what people paid for privately, and it really didn't have that much of an impact as far as kind of the whole healthcare system goes in the U.S. And in other countries. So what's really changed over the last 10 to 15 years is all of a sudden, and in a relatively short period of time, really in the last 3 to 5 years, it seems like there's a lot of interest in what we're doing as companies and what private pay home care and home care in general means to the healthcare ecosystem. So very quickly, I'm just going to do this for the purposes of the call. So you have to understand there's two types of home care in the country. One is home health and one is home care. And even though I just used the term home care to describe both of them, I'm using the broad term home care to mean we're taking care of people in the home environment. But that industry is really separated into two segments, home health and home care. Home health is your entitlement care. That's what the government is paying for under Medicare and Medicaid. And then the home care side is the private side. That's where clients then are participating and paying for their own care and directing the type of care that they want. So home health has been around forever and has been a part of the healthcare ecosystem for a long, long time. Home care was not. We were never really had a seat at the table. Nobody really paid that much attention to home care. They knew we were out there, but they just didn't see that we fit into their world because the client was paying for it. What's happening now, and has happened very rapidly, is that because of the drivers and the changes that are occurring in the healthcare system and in society in general, policymakers in Washington at the state level, insurance companies and others are recognizing that we have a wealth of information. We know what's happening in that home environment better than anybody else does. So one thing that's very clear is our government wants to push more care into the home environment. So I don't think I'm going out on a limb when I say that in the next 20 years, the modern hospital as you know it today is going to exist in a very different form and maybe not exist in its current form at all in 20 years, because the goal of our government and insurance companies and everybody else is to push care into the home environment. It's the cheapest place to take care of people, and we need to drive costs out of our healthcare system, and so one way to do that is push more care into the home. So as a result of that, they're trying to figure out how exactly to do that, but they don't know that environment. So hospitals don't know what it's like to try to take care of people in a home environment. We do. And the reason why we have a different voice than home health care companies is because home health care companies are episodic. They come in and out of clients' lives based on events. Someone falls and fractures their hip, they get home health for 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, and then it's done. And then home health is not back in their house until they have another event. Home care, our business, we're brought in by the family. We're hired by the family. We work with the family. We develop custom care plans around what the client needs. So we have had clients in our system that have been in our system for 5, 6, 7, 8 years because they continue to pay for our services. So over that time period, we have a lot of optics into what happens in the home, the dynamics with the family, what the healthcare system calls social determinants of health. We're the best source of that data right now. And so that's why all of a sudden people are very interested in the role that we play. And some of that has to do also with the fact that, you know, we did a study with the Harvard Medical School several years ago, and it was specifically on this issue, understanding the role that home care could play in the whole healthcare ecosystem. That woke a lot of people up to the value of these services as well. So sorry for the very long answer, but it's kind of necessary. So this role is evolving. We suddenly have a seat at the table. We're at conferences. We're talking to government, regulators and policymakers in Washington. We're meeting with insurance companies, and people are very interested in what we have to say. And we have not, by any stretch of the imagination, leveraged that completely. There's still a lot of things that we can do to enhance our role within the healthcare system.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring up the government there. So I guess from a political standpoint, we've seen that during these elections that healthcare reform has just been a huge part of what we hear with the candidates' messaging. With that being said, what's Right at Home strategic plan based on who's in power in Washington? How does that change if there's a shift in power in Washington?
It's a really great question, and I'll sort of answer it this way. I don't particularly worry one way or the other about which party is in control or who's in the White House. And the reason is that because there's public rhetoric, there's election rhetoric, and there's what's really happening behind the scenes, and there's the real work that's being done. So I don't really pay much attention to what politicians say, whether they're on the stump or whatever, especially in an election cycle. I pay more attention to what's happening behind the scenes and reading the tea leaves of the behavior of our government. So what I mean by that is if I look at and study, which I do with others, and pay attention to what the government's doing, there, what I just talked about is the reality of our world, and that is we're going to have twice as many people in our country over the age of 65 in the next 20 to 25 years. Those individuals are going to live longer and have more chronic care conditions than any generation before them. So, we're pushing people are living into their 90s now on a very regular basis, and even into their hundreds on a very regular basis, where 20, 25 years ago that was kind of an oddity. That's not the case anymore. We also have, as I said, the baby boom generation has more chronic care conditions. We have problems with obesity and things like that in the country as well. So all of that's leading to a lot of people that are going to be over the age of 65 and are going to have a lot. They're going to be huge users of health care. They're already huge users because 80% of someone's lifetime health care costs occur after the age of 65, and then you're adding years to people's lives as we've been doing. So I could go into this in detail, but the reality is it just suffices to say we're going to have twice as many people in our country over the age of 65. They're going to be living longer than ever. We've got a lot of factors in our society that are going to push people to aging at home and alone. And as a result, the government's going to have to try to figure out how to take this very limited amount of resources that they have and get care to twice as many people. That's the reality. It's a math problem right now. We're going to have twice as many people over the age of 65. And the one thing that I'll wind this up by saying is this generation, the baby boom generation, that's going to be the generation that's going to double our aging population, quit having children. And so the birth rates dropped off dramatically after the baby boom. And as a result, two things happen when you don't keep birth rates high. Number one, you don't replace the workforce behind you. So that's a problem, because not only do we not have workers, the other thing that you don't do when you don't replace the workforce is workers earn money. And as when they earn money, they pay taxes. And so we have a smaller tax base coming forward. and then a whole lot of people that are going to need care that the government has a social contract with that they're going to take care of them through Medicare and Medicaid. So as a result, I don't care about political rhetoric. I care about what's actually happening when it comes to policy. And so all of the policy changes, all of the things that are happening behind the scenes are pushing towards Medicare and Medicaid covering less care, and people who want to age in place are going to have to participate in their aging. They're going to have to pay for it. And so the future for our business is very, very, very good on both fronts, because we may be able to work with the government on some aspects of business, and we'll still be able to get business from those individuals that can pay for our services and utilize services, our services, the way they want to age the way they want.
Well, you had mentioned prior that staying in home for your care is going to reduce costs, and obviously, like you've just touched upon, you know, we're going to be doubling up on the people over the age of 65 here in the next 20 to 25 years, and it doesn't seem like that pool of money for help is going to grow at the same pace. So, just how is in-home care? How, you know, dollars and cents wise, how are we able to be cost effective for people? What does that mean for hospital systems to partner with somebody like us?
Well, where hospital systems, where we're of interest to hospital systems is with readmissions. So, I'll come back to that in a second. So how do we work with clients? Ultimately, we know that, you know, not everybody can afford 24-hour day care 365 days out of the year. So that we understand that. So one of the things that we have to do when we bring clients forward, when clients present, potential clients present to us, our franchise owners, you know, need to sit down with the client and say, okay, let's get an understanding of what's going on in your life. So why did you call us? What are you looking for? Tell me about your mom or dad's situation or your husband's situation or whatever. In that process, you also learn about the care structure of the family. So who's available? Who else do you lean on for care? Does the client live alone? Does the client live with somebody that takes care of them? Is there a neighbor that helps out? Is there a daughter close? Those are the things that I was talking about earlier when I said social determinants of care. We understand and have access to a whole lot of information about how people are aging in their home environment. So when we figure all of that out, then we work with the family or whomever that is, you know, whether it's the son, the daughter, or whomever, to construct a care plan that makes sense for the family. So if they can really only afford right at home for a few hours a day or maybe even a few hours a couple times a week, then we'll work with the family to bring in other care options, be it technology or medication management systems or things like that, or we'll look at adult day or some other options that are might be available in their community. So we problem solve. We don't just don't go in and say, okay, look, yeah, you're just going to need 10 hours a day of home care. That doesn't make sense for most clients. So let's construct something that makes sense for the family. And whatever is constructed on that day is likely going to change, because as that person ages or, you know, they have exasperations with certain parts or certain chronic care, we might have to change that. So that's kind of the dynamic of how we work with our families. How are hospitals interested in working with us? Right now, primarily they're interested in working, you know, just number one on just simple discharges. They have people in the hospital that need to go home, and they don't want to send them home alone. They don't want to just dump them off in a house where there's nobody there. So, you know, they arrange for or make it easy for family members to connect with companies like Right at Home and others. Where they work with us directly, it's a lot with discharge and transitions programs where they, because they're motivated to keep people from rebounding and bouncing back into the hospital, some hospitals, and we'll probably see more of this, but some hospitals are paying for our services directly,
oh, wow,
cutting the client out and just paying for services, to ensure that there's continuation of care that's following the client home and that client does not bounce back into the hospital, which costs the hospital a significant amount of money. So that's one of the ways that we're working with hospitals directly right now.
Well, we're kind of coming to the end of the time slot here. One of the things I wanted to make sure that I asked you about was, you know, I've heard you talk about how Right at Home is a home care company. It's not a franchise company. So, you know, in closing, you know, how does our philosophy impact where Right at Home fits just into this overall healthcare continuum?
Yeah, so I'm a healthcare guy. I came into the healthcare industry back in 1986 is when I first entered. So I've been in this industry for a long time. Alan is also a healthcare guy. He was in the healthcare industry for a long time. So we chose franchising back in 1999 because it makes sense in the services that we provide and in the local, you know, the strength of having a local owner. Really matches well for franchising, and this business matches well for franchising. So we chose that as a vehicle for growth. But we're really healthcare people at our core. And while maybe that wasn't as beneficial back in 2001, 2003 in that area time, but now that the healthcare system is changing, you know, really thinking of ourselves as a healthcare company with you know, that happens to be distributed through a franchise channel is, I think, a good way to go, because we do have to think about ourselves that way, because we do have a role within this healthcare ecosystem, and we got to think about ourselves as being a valuable component of somebody's aging. And so, I think it's a minor mindset change, but I think it's an important mindset change that we all realize, including all of our franchise owners, that we really are a home care company, a healthcare company that just happens to expand and grow through franchising.
Well, I think that's a good thing to close on today, Brian. Thank you again for taking some time out of your day to talk with us about this type of stuff, and I'm sure it provides great insights to the folks that are participating in these calls and that are looking into potentially becoming franchisees with us. And I just want to thank everybody again that took time out of their day to continue to learn about Right at Home and about where we're fitting into the healthcare continuum these days. And next week we have a really great call being hosted by Karen Zuger. And she is our Vice President of Business Development and Strategic Partnerships. So this is going to be a good one to participate in, because she is going to be discussing our strategic partnerships out there and giving you all some good insight on that. So that's going to be a good one. It's going to be one you're going to want to put on your calendar as well. But I want to, once again, thanks, Brian, again, for taking some time. And thank you all for taking some time today as well.
Great. Thank you, Trevor. Thanks, everybody.